This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. To Michael Yon. Michael Yon at locals.com is at the end of the Pan-American Highway. There's a gap. After Michael, there's a gap of about 60 miles, which is impenetrable triple canopy jungle, except for young people and migrants go through that impenetrable jungle routinely in what is called the Darien Gap. Michael is at the edge of a migrant camp that is being maintained by the Panamanian authorities. The story grows larger and larger. We learn from the Wall Street Journal that thousands, tens of thousands, are passing through Central America to the American border and then into America over this last year. But Michael's witnessed just one incident most recently, right in front of him at the edge, watching the San Vicente migrant camp, that tells you that the migrants are being very well treated in Panama. Michael, a very good day to you. You witnessed a young woman trying to escape the refugee camp that's been set up there at the end of Highway 1, Pan-American Highway. What did you see and what happened?
Yes, I was sitting right where I'm at now. And she left. I can see the San Vicente camp right in front of me. And it's about 250 meters away. And she walked out and she was very upset. She was speaking Spanish. A Cinefront guy, which is their border patrol, they are very professional, very fit guys. I've, you know, watched them all over the jungles last year and now this year. One of them came after her with no weapon or anything. They always carry a pistol, but, you know, it's in his holster. And it comes after her. He's like, you know, telling her to slow down, slow down. She made it almost all the way to Highway 1, which is the highway that goes to Alaska from here. And she made it to within, you know, 20, 30, 40 meters from Highway 1. And he caught up with her and calmed her down, just using his voice. And she, you know, she kept shouting and shouting. He kept talking with her, and she became more calm. And finally, he put his hand on her back, and she calmed down more. And then he got her to turn around without any force at all. He just using his voice and got her to walk back to the camp. She was still talking loudly, but she was more calm. And he was just like, you know, it's okay, let's go. And they went back to the camp. And now I just saw her get on a bus when I just called you up.
Right. She went back to the camp. There was some time that passed, and now she's on a bus headed to Costa Rica with other of the migrants. That's what happens routinely inside the camp. Michael, what's it like? You've witnessed it. How's it arranged? And are they fed? Or are they taken care of inside the camp?
They're very well taken care of. I've droned over the camp and been in, you know, there numerous times, and it's right. I can see it. It's nice tents. The UN has two big tents there. UNICEF, of course, you know, taking our tax dollars and pumping migrants in all over America. This is the pump station here. But they're very well taken care of. They have, you know, water, showers. They get catered meals from a local caterer that comes in his van three times a day with, you know, meals for everybody that's here. And, yeah, there's no problems. There's doctors that come and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's. Let's put it like this. It's better than a lot of the backpacking I did when I was younger. You know, the hard part is going through Darien Gap. Once they make it through Darien, then, of course, they're going to have to deal with cartels and gangsters up in Mexico. But a lot of what I've seen, except for the Darien Gap part, is no more difficult than any of the backpacking I and millions of other people did for fun when we were younger, right? Except they have a goal in mind. I'm not saying that they're doing this for fun. That's obviously untrue. They're trying to get to they're either running from something. Some are no doubt criminals running from the country where they're from, and others are running to a better life. And so, you know, I don't know what's in all of their heads, but of course, millions of them are coming. And and some parts of the journey are very dangerous and very bad.
Right.
And most of it's just sort of like backpacking for 2 weeks to get to America.
We learned from the Wall Street Journal within these last days that since the spring of 2021, when you were there, when you introduced us to the Darien Gap, Michael went to Colombia. He visited in Colombia, and it pointed him to the Darien Gap. So he traveled to the edge of Colombia and then across the bay, across the inlet, to Panama, where the Darien Gap, the entrance to the Darien Gap, is on the Panama side. He didn't go through the Darien Gap, but he then became very curious about this mechanism that was being used by hardy and daring young people, and some not so young, an arduous journey. And that's why Michael introduced this to us, and I learned about it in detail. However, what we've learned now from the Wall Street Journal is since Michael was first visiting in Colombia and Panama, 130,000 Venezuelans have come to America in the last year, Michael, spring to February of this year. We can presume that the bulk of them passed through the Darien Gap. Have you seen Venezuelans in the San Vicente camp since you've been there this time?
Oh, yes. They come through here. Most of them will come through this camp or Las Blancas camp, which is not far away. It's about a 15-minute drive. Here comes a bus now. You'll hear it going by if they keep coming. So this will be a bus going out to Highway 1. And so to go north to Costa Rica. But, yes, Venezuelans, I saw them out in the jungle at a place called Canan Membrillo, which is very difficult to find. You might find it on Google Earth, maybe not. It took me an hour to drive to the river and then 3 hours by Piragua boat, you know, the dugout canoes. Took 3 hours, you know, up the Apocalypse Now River. And actually on that river, you have to use smaller dugout canoes than you can use going to Bajo Chiquito because that river gets very small. And so you can only use very small boats. And we almost tipped over twice. You know, it's a little bit more perilous. But we did make it. But part of the journey also included getting three of the bridge. Oh, this is interesting, John. I need to tell you about this. It's kind of a side story, but related. Three of the ridges of bridges have been that I've used in the past have been blown out by the floods in the last about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And they get blown out every year. So the bridges are usually up for 2 or 3 months at a time. And so for the other approximately 9 months, there's no bridge, right? And so we had to take on the car that we took into the jungle, we had our little pickup truck. We had to get it on top of a homemade, you know, floats with the 55-gallon drums on, you know, wood that they found in the jungle type thing. And they used the little dugout canoes with motors on them to get us across the river. It was very dangerous, but we made it there and back. So we made it twice. But let me tell you about the bridges. This is really interesting. As you know, the Chinese are chopping down this jungle. This is incredibly beautiful jungle. You can hear the birds now. I mean, I love the birds and the wildlife down here. The Chinese are chopping it down. And I don't mean shiploads at a time. Shiploads of wood are going off overseas from here. But what they do is they build these bridges. The Chinese build the bridges once a year, and then they get paid for the bridges by the local Indian, Imbara and Munan Indians, by trees from their jungles. So in other words, right now the Chinese are out, or not Chinese, it's actually Panamanians doing it. They're chopping down the trees right now and they're stacking them up. And then the next dry season, they rebuild the bridges, get all those trees out as quickly as they can, get them to the boats and sail away. So right now the bridges are blown out. They're just chopping trees down right now as we speak. I was just out there droning yesterday and the day before. I mean, so this is epic. They're destroying. Eventually, at this rate, too, in addition to one of the most incredible jungles in the world being destroyed, they're going to open up a direct path between Colombia and Panama.
Michael, when we last talked, the news was that the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mr. Blinken and Mr. Mayorkas, are coming to Panama in these next days, I believe Tuesday and Wednesday of this coming week, in order to confer about migration and other matters of interest to the government of Panama. Your expectation is that they will address the Darien Gap. What else have you learned about this visit? Is there any description that you can help us understand? What can they do about the Darien Gap? Because what I can hear from you is that the government of Panama is treating these migrants very well.
The government of Panama they're very civilized in Panama. Panamanians are very civilized people, so they're going to treat them well. I was supposed to land in Arizona here in a few hours because I was going to leave Panama and go up and meet some congressmen in Panama. I mean, sorry, Arizona, and go to the border there and then come straight back here to Panama. But then we just got news yesterday day before that the you know, that the Secretary of State and Mayorkas as well are coming down here. So I canceled my trip, and I am at the camp that I think that they're going to come to. What I believe that they're going to do is our government officials, Blinken and Mayorkas, I believe they're going to fly to Panama City and get a briefing at the embassy and then by some others, for instance, Cinefront, who's going in front of me right now in their patrol truck. And then they'll fly down here by helicopter to this camp. That's what I believe that they're going to do. And if they come down here, maybe I can ask them some questions. Maybe not. But there's a helipad not far from here, a tiny airport that the one of the Cinefront pilots often eats lunch here. He just came in today with his uniform. So, they'll probably fly down here, see some, you know, get some photos taken about all the good deeds that they're doing. But in reality, they're just pumping. They're creating this pump to pump more migrants to the United States, even while Georgia just declared a state of emergency on supply chain issues. Right. So this is a big deal right now in Panama. You can see fuel prices going up, food prices going up quite a lot, not as much as they've gone up in the United States, but they, you know, people don't make much money here either. And so, yeah, it's getting very serious. And as you know, the migrants are put a serious strain on Colombia when the Venezuelans, due to Venezuela, you know, collapsing, which happened long before the pandemic, they were, you know, everybody blames something, you know, the Ukraine war for the food shortage, which will certainly be a huge additive pressure, massive additive pressure. But these things were already in play before these things happened. And now all along the way with Venezuela collapsing or having collapsed, you know, of course, many of the Venezuelans flooded straight out to next door Colombia. I saw them all over the streets in Colombia, and city after city, town after town. And then now with the events in Colombia, as you know, Colombia has their own problems. And now, you know, Colombia doesn't want them there either, right? And as you've seen the food, here comes one of the migrant buses right now. It's backing up to pick up migrants. So this is the third bus. It's going, you can hear it going by me. So yes. The, in Peru, having food riots in the last week or so. I mean, this is, and Peru is one of the throughputs for the migrants that are coming here, by the way. So all of these countries, you know, are getting worse and worse. And as you know, when things collapse, they tend to do it on, you know, the weakest members collapse first, for instance. And I was in Greece last year, not a coincidence. Greece is arguably the weakest country in the whole EU, probably not arguably. Probably just is. And of course, you know, Italy, of course. So I'm watching these countries like Portugal, you know, the weakest ones, which one's going to collapse first? We see Sri Lanka going off, you know, off the, it's been a while since I've been to Sri Lanka, but you know, they should have plenty of food. Let's put it that way. But right now, due to many reasons, they don't. And we see the same thing happening in Lebanon, in Syria, in Egypt, in Nigeria. So we see all of these different places under tremendous strain, and these will cause mass migrations, and many of those will come right into this camp, right, which they're expanding. They're expanding this camp.
Michael Yon at locals.com to watch Michael's reporting. Michael discovered these desperate people a year ago for me. And since then, they've become a focus of international attention, hence the visit by two members of the cabinet. We can expect this story will grow, however, because, as Michael identifies, the turmoil of food security and fuel security is penetrating everywhere in the world, but it's winter time in South America, and that is not a good time to be out of those critical details in your life, such as being able to work or being able to eat. Michael Yon, this is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.